Welcome, Lund Loyalists, to John Lund Unleashed. Those watching on YouTube, on the John Lund Unleashed and Bay Area Sports Collective channels. Viewers on X, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Facebook, and Lundos listening to the podcast on Apple and Spotify. John Lund Unleashed, brought to you by Reappell Sports Medicine. Got pain? Check out our revolutionary stem cell treatments. And guys, if low T is bringing you down, Reappell Sports Medicine can put you back in the game. Now all juiced up and ready to go, here's John.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. It is Monday, May 19th. Appreciate you hanging out. We got a lot to get to today. We haven't had an opportunity because Warriors playoffs and Giant and 49ers and Brock Purdy signing and draft and just all sorts of crazy stuff going on that we are past the one-quarter pole point of the season. So with the Giants sweeping the A's, we will go over what the Giants have accomplished so far and pretty much A's across the board. I mean, there's some guys, obviously, that need to get things going. But right there, as you can see, Flores over the weekend with a three-home run game. And Elliot Ramos, at the beginning of the season, at least I talked a lot about it. We're going to see the first half guy or the second half guy. He's been a little bit up and down, but he's been absolutely great, especially in that leadoff spot. So we'll get into that conversation. Hicks out, Birdsong in, which I've been screaming about for a long time. So it is episode 143. Thanks for joining us. We'll go to the chalkboard in a second. Say good morning to everyone as well. But thank you, thank you, thank you for making the time to watch John Lund Unleashed on YouTube. All you have to do is make sure you're subscribed, have those alerts on because we send out stuff throughout the day as well. Please hit me up on Bay Area Sports Collective. Not only my show is there, but Tom Tolbert is there. Of course, he'll be on later. Pauly Mack and Creative Tony, Pauly Mack's Particles, that'll be on at 11 o'clock this morning. Rod Brooks and Rod, and he is the newest addition, but we will have more as well. But Rod Brooks, it was great to have him. A lot of guys from KNBR. So make sure that you stay tuned. Plus, we have others to follow. They won't tell me anymore because I just blab things out, but that's just the way it goes. If you're watching on X, thanks for joining us at John Lund Radio. I forgot to hit go on, let's see, go live right there, Instagram. We are now live on Instagram as well. So however you're watching, LinkedIn possibly, Facebook as well, however you're doing it, thank you, thank you, thank you for making the time. As I always say, it'd be great if you migrated over to YouTube. That would be outstanding. And subscribe to us there, and please tell all your friends and enemies, and hit that like button before you get out of here today as well so we can grow the fine community that we have and the algorithm as well. As far as the as episode 143 is concerned, the Giants sweep, we'll get into that. But not only that, we'll kind of widen the lens out a little bit. And as a whole, I don't know how you could be happier. And the thing is, I think that this is going to last for the Giants because it's not like they have a bunch of guys playing over their head. In fact, I think they have a lot of guys who can actually play better. So if I was a Giants fan, I would be optimistic about what I'm seeing so far, because you look at certain things and you go, well, that can't last. Well, that can't last. Well, that can't last. Well, a lot of things that they're doing can last, and they actually have some players who can play better. So I think they can hang in this thing. So we'll get into that conversation. Wilmer Ramos over the weekend, Birdsong is in. We'll discuss. You'll hear from Justin Verlander. He didn't want to talk about it, which makes me a little bit nervous about what possibly it is. Your Brock reacts. And I had a great I guess it was a comment on the show on Saturday show. And by the way, we're here Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. Pacific on John Lund Unleashed, and Saturdays at 10 a.m. as well as things throughout the day. But had a really good comment that made me think, and this is why I love it. I don't think I know everything. I don't think I know anything. But what I do know is people come up with stuff all the time, and it's great to get these comments. And it's why I'm not just saying this as kind of a show philosophy, but I really believe it. I don't sit here and act like I know everything. And I like when people come back with certain things and say, well, why this and what that? And it's great. It makes for a great conversation. That's why it's a bummer to me what's going on in our country. And I'm not going to get political, but in terms of, you know, if you have a differing viewpoint, people just shut you off right away. They're not even willing to listen anymore. And it used to be great when I got into this business 30 years ago, you could have spirited debates that were not contrived and pre-discussed like they are on ESPN and Fox during the day or anything. And nobody, you know, people just took the viewpoints that they really believed in. And you might get heated with those things, but most of the time you just had fun with it and everybody chimed in, and it was like kind of sitting at a bar. That was the original premise of sports radio. And so many people had told me, you know, what you want to do, whether it was program directors, and I said it to people as well, and advisors and all those kind of people who get into this business, and they say, what you want to do is You want to act like you're sitting at a sports bar and you're just bullshitting. You're just sitting around. That's all you're doing. It's not screaming. It's not yelling. If you and your buddies were having a bunch of beers and just hanging out, what it would be is you just talk some sports and you talk some life and you talk, you know, there's not screaming and yelling and you're right and I'm wrong and you're an idiot and all this kind of stuff. You're just hanging out laughing, you know, and that's kind of what you try to create in this whole thing. And things have gotten lost in that certain way. But anyway, there was a point made by Brock over the weekend by somebody with the comments underneath Saturday's show. And I thought it was a really good point that I'm going to bring up today. Sounds like Fred Warner is close to a deal. I told you that was the last thing that the 49ers needed to do, is his number jumps from $12.6 million last year to over $29 million this year and then $26.7 the year after that. As great as Fred Warner is, he's not playing on that number. And I talked to Fred, as did a number of media members, I don't know, six weeks ago, when all of the offseason stuff started. And to say that Fred wasn't worried about it is an understatement. I mean, Fred was just kind of like, whatever, things happen. And remember, that was before Brock and before all this stuff of the offseason. And he knew that his time would come. It was before Kittle signed his deal. He knew his time would come. And he was asked two or three questions about it and couldn't have been more laid back and casual. Now, part of that is probably, you know, it'll happen. Some of it is he's going to let his agent handle it. Some guys are more worried than other guys. But like I said, Fred just seemed to be very laid back about it. And it seems, I think Jennifer Lee Chan, to give proper credit, was the one who came up with it first. And so it looks like Fred Warner's deal is going to get done. So it's kind of funny to me. And again, this is just reaction, that people go from panicking. You know, when they lost all these guys that they really didn't lose outside of Greenlaw of a lot of consequence, everyone was freaking out. And then the draft comes and people are optimistic. Then the schedule, which it cracks me up because we already knew what the schedule was. We just didn't know the order. We knew it was a bunch of shitty teams. We knew it was one playoff team at home with the Rams. We knew that by rolling out of bed and not having too many crazy injuries and all the nuttiness that happened last year, that they could win 10 games, this team, especially offensively. And I told you this time and time and time and time again. I don't know, Trent Williams, George Kittle, Christian McCaffrey, Brock Purdy, Kyle Juszczyk, Juwan Jennings, when Ayuk returns, Ricky Pearsall, hopefully he lives up to some sort of a billing as a first-round pick. They're going to score points. There's no question about it. They're going to score points. Robert Saleh is your defensive coordinator. Can he meld together a bunch of young players, especially those guys in the middle? I mean, three of their four guys up front next to Nick Bosa could all be rookies in Collins and West and Mikel Williams. That could be your starters, and that would be huge. Nick Martin's going to be huge at the next level. I'm concerned about the secondary, but if Robert Saleh can somehow meld that unit into even a top 15 unit, the Niners are going to win 10, 11 games just based on that schedule. So all of a sudden, what happens is the schedule comes out, then Fred, you know, Brock signs, Kittle signs, Warner's going to, you know, his deal's getting close, and all of a sudden it's like, wow, what a great offseason for the 49ers. Wait a minute, weren't these the same people ripping the hell out of the 49ers because they weren't doing anything, because they let all these guys go? I'm not saying that people are saying the 49ers are Super Bowl contenders, but that's good for the Niners. That's always been a misnomer amongst fans, by the way, that everybody should be talking about your team. You really don't want anybody talking about your team. You want to sneak up on everybody. The Niners can't do that. You know, they're the Niners. They come walking in and people are like, okay, we're in for a battle today. Kyle Shanahan's 49ers can't sneak up on anybody. Just like we'll get into the Warriors today. The Warriors can't sneak up on anybody. And the expectations are championship or bust. Steve Kerr said something over the weekend that I was like, no. Not as long as you're around, Steve. Not as long as Steph is around. We'll get into that a little bit later on in the show. So anyway, a ton to get to today. Dunleavy, I played this on Saturday, and I want to play it again for you. NBA Final Four, it's not the most exciting Final Four. Oklahoma City did bomb Denver, and so they move on, and they take on Minnesota. That's going to be a good series. The Knicks are going to play the Pacers. The Knicks are probably the best team in the Final Four, and that would be crazy if the Knicks won a championship, to be honest with you. I haven't looked at the odds this morning. I would think the odds would say the Knicks are the favorite amongst the teams. Maybe it's going to be Oklahoma City. That gives them, I think, a ton of confidence to outdo a team like the Nuggets, a championship-caliber team that, by the way, is so lacking in depth. And with Aaron Gordon being compromised, he played on a grade 2 hamstring strain. Grade 2. And people were like, well, Steph couldn't even play on a grade 1. Everybody's different. Everybody's different. Plus, I told you, man, Steph is awesome. Steph is great. Steph is this. Steph is that. He's 37. I'm not blaming Steph Curry for not playing on a grade 1 and Gordon did on a grade 2. It wasn't great. Anyway, that's part of the stuff. And then, as always, random thoughts as you go to the bottom of the chalkboard, random thoughts always on the show, as people can throw me off very consistently. Remember, if you want to get your thoughts on the board, 100%, no questions asked, make sure that you hit us up with a super or a sticker or something like that. But again, good morning to everybody, and I hope everybody just had an amazing weekend. I did, by the way, took advantage of the weather yesterday, by the way, before we get into major conversations. Took advantage of the weather yesterday, headed down to Santa Cruz, and I didn't realize, maybe you already know this, but if you ever go down there, I don't know if this is just on the most beautiful days, but we walked the pier yesterday. So we went downtown. The kids want to do some shopping. There's a ton of thrift stores and everything. My son is way into that. So we go walking around. We have some lunch, have a great time. And then we go out. I don't know if you know this, but we go out to the tiki bar, the rotating tiki bar at the end of the pier there in Santa Cruz. But what's cool was they have a beer garden there. They have a beer garden with just like folding chairs and stuff like that out there. It's just really casual. And then they have like a cool little like Mexican food trailer with tacos and quesadillas and all sorts of stuff. So that's what the kids wanted to eat. And then they had a local brewery there in Santa Cruz, great beers. And we just sat in the beer garden, just a little fenced off area right on the water, and just hung out and drank beers. Beautiful day. Sun was out. It was amazing. Just a great day. Great time had by all. So very relaxing day yesterday. Very nice. By the way, if you went to the game this weekend, I'd love to get your thoughts. Let's start there, as a matter of fact, with episode 143. The Giants get the sweep. Before I get into, because we haven't had a chance to do the quarter poll point of the season as far as the Giants are concerned, let me play something for Bob Melvin over the weekend. I want to get your thoughts on it. Of course, it's different for him. He managed the A's, and now he's with the Giants. So it doesn't matter if it says Sacramento, Oakland, Vegas. It doesn't matter. Kansas City. It's the A's are the A's are the A's to him. So here's Bob Melvin after the game talking about A's v. Giants and what it feels like to him.
Rivalry here. So you just don't have Oakland on the name, but it's still, you know, it's as raucous crowds probably as we get all year, the Dodgers. But A's, it's different level stuff for me still. And it's just the way
I apologize. I should have went to one of these games. I didn't have an opportunity over the weekend. Like I said, Sunday was in Santa Cruz. Saturday, we were dealing with some stuff. And Friday night, we did Top of the Pint, which was a roaring success for the Giants and the A's. Larry Kruger and I do that every Friday. We combine the show. So the Krug Show and John Lund Unleashed on Friday. And we do Bottom of the Pint. We have a great time with it. But if you went to the games this weekend, and I watched them all, but it's hard. This is one thing where... You know, I've covered events, years and years and years and years and years. And sometimes media members will kind of overvalue that. There are certain games where it's like you can feel it through the TV. You don't need to have been there. There's a lot of situations where being there is, you know, you can pick up intricate things. You can get the feel of the game. I mean, it just depends. I'd like to know if you went to the game or how you feel about it or whatever. To me, I mean, they just barely moved up to Sacramento. I realize that it could be a mile, it could be 100 miles, it could be 1,000 miles. Sacramento, in terms of some Oakland fans, are just not going to go up there. Like I said, I went up there the third game of the year. It felt like a spring training game to me. I'm not ripping it. I'm just telling you what it felt like. I'm going to bring my son up there, and you know, I didn't mind it. I didn't mind it. But again, I know that there's a lot of people who are like, "No way, man! I'm Oakland. I'm not giving John Fisher my money." I also know a lot of people, because I got response from it, and I got some texts from some friends who watched the show and said, "Look, I'm going down to the games. I'm an Oakland fan, and I'm not going to give John Fisher my money directly, and I'd rather give it to the Giants." And so they went to the game. So I'd like to know your thoughts, Bob, as the former manager of the A's. Anytime he sees that uniform, it's going to feel like, you know, it's going to be a rivalry. To me, that's what it felt like. I've told you this before. The Raiders going to Vegas and watching the Raiders and the Niners, or the Raiders versus anybody. I've seen a couple of Raider games that didn't involve the 49ers. It's just, it's not the same. There's no black hole. There's no intimidation. It's the other team that's the majority of the team. There's a nightclub in one side of the, in one of the end zones, as Papa used to call it, the black hole and the other hole. The other hole is now a nightclub, and it's adjacent where the VIPs go in. It's adjacent to where the media goes in. And so I remember the first time it was Niners and Raiders, and I just stood there because George was with me, my son. We just stood there and watched these women get out of these limousines, you know, with these big boots and short skirts and all this kind of stuff. And they looked very Vegas. And then these guys, these fat cat guys, would come behind them. And I'm sure it was the casinos and the guys who were rolling the dice and spending the money and et cetera. And that wasn't a Raiders game to me. Now, good, bad, or indifferent, I'm just telling you, it was different. It didn't have any kind of a feel. of a Niners Raiders game. In fact, it was mostly Niners fans. Just like when I went to other games there, went to an Eagles Raiders game, it was all Eagles fans. Like it's just a place to travel for the other team. So there's no feel of Oakland to a Raiders game, none whatsoever. The uniforms are the same. That's about it. So the reason why I'm doing that comparison is that's not the way it looked to me as far as the A's and the Giants were concerned. It's still the A's and the Giants. Now, if they move to Vegas, is it going to be different? Sure, it's going to be different, but it's going to take some time. Now, again, you're going to go to an A's game presuming they make it there, which I don't, because John Fisher can screw up anything. But if you go to an A's Giants there at some point, yeah, it's going to feel just like a Raiders game does. The ones here, because of the uniform, because of the history, because of the green and gold, I think it's going to feel just like a Giants-A's games for a while, even if it says Vegas across the front. Could be 100% wrong. Like I said, going there is going to be totally different. Here, at least for the time being, is the however long they're going to be in Sacramento, it certainly feels the same. So, but the big picture of the whole thing is the Giants get the sweep, and Wilmer and Flores, I have at the top of the screen there, Wilmer hits the three home runs on Friday night. That's right, because I was trying to think. Yeah, we were on the air Friday night. So Wilmer hits the three home runs on Friday night. Ramos will get to in a second. Let me just stop for Wilmer for a second, and then we'll go through, like I said, we're going to do the quarter point poll of the with the Giants and see where they're at. But in terms of Wilmer, I think this is still the case. What do you have, 42 RBIs, and it leads the league ahead of Aaron Judge. And Judge has like 41 RBIs, 16 home runs. He's hitting .401. I mean, he's even overshadowing Ohtani at this point. He's been so good. So to put that in perspective, a guy who had, what, 20? I think it was 4 home runs, 23 RBIs last year for Wilmer Flores, fought all sorts of injuries. And it was one of those situations where in spring training, you're listening to the manager and you're just saying, he's full of shit, right? He's sitting there going, yeah, well, Wilmer's going to get I almost went into like a Lou Brown, like Bob Melvin is, it's not that, or Bruce Bochy or something. But Bob Melvin essentially said, hey, he's healthy. He's going to have a good year. We value Wilmer. I'm like, yeah, this is the guy in the last year's deal. Come on. He's no good. And for him to hit the three home runs, for him to have 41, 42 RBIs, whatever he has at this point, is nothing short of a miracle. I don't know that he's an all-star or anything like that. I mean, I guess with these kind of numbers, it'd be hard to deny him. But I mean, 42 RBIs, and you know, look, I'm into some traditional stats. Home runs still matter to me. Runs batted in still matter to me. Batting average is not that big of a deal. I get it. But home runs and RBIs are still a thing. You knock home runs, name of the game is score more runs than your opponent. Then if you're knocking in runs, that's kind of a big deal. So I still think that's one of the traditional stats that matter. And if you lead the league in RBIs 25-30% into the season, which we are now, then I think that's a big deal. So first and foremost, give it up to Wilmer for the things that he has done. As far as Ramos is concerned, I talked about this, and I'm going to throw some stats up on the board in just a second. But I talked about this right at the beginning of the season. We talked about the what-ifs of the Giants, right? What if this, what if that? And one of the what-ifs was, what if Ramos, is he going to be the first half guy or the second half guy? Well, at times he's kind of been up and down a little bit, but he had the leadoff home run and he's got an OPS, I think about .855 right now. He's the guy that we saw in the first half. He's an all-star caliber player. And all of a sudden you look at this outfield, Mike Yastrzemski's having the year of his life. Jung-Hoo Lee is somewhat, I think, living up to the contract. And that's always going to be a bit of an albatross around his neck because he got paid a lot of money. Especially a lot of money in regards to the Giants and position players, but I think he's playing up to it this year. So all of a sudden they have a really, really solid outfield and Ramos is a big part of it and he's leading off and he's a really good athlete. And I like his game. And so you go from a year ago where, okay, he comes out of nowhere. Let's just see. Second half, he falls off. Maybe the pitchers have figured him out. And now all of a sudden he's coming and playing the way he's playing. That's just massive for the Giants. So Ramos and Wilmer over the weekend, big story, and I've been screaming and yelling, and I give a lot of credit to Jordan Hicks. I guess what else is he going to say? But Jordan Hicks, over the weekend, there's a piece, I know Alex Pavlovich wrote about it, Susan Susser wrote about it, where essentially Jordan Hicks said, look, man, I wasn't getting it done. He was 1-5 with a .655 ERA and hadn't pitched well in a while, and he said, you know what, I'm not getting it done, and I got to go to the bullpen and understand that. Now, he's a long guy for now, because he stretched out to throw, you know, 100 pitches. So I get it. But long term for this guy, I don't know that you give him another chance next year, because if you look at things, let me just pop something up, because the Giants pen again, and they have a 2.59 ERA, which is number one in baseball. But saw this. I don't know who Warren is. I know Jeff does a really good job. So in the series, Giants pen, 10 innings pitched, one hit, 10 strikeouts, one walk. I mean, that was the bullpen over the weekend. They're just it's the number one unit on the team, and it's not even close. Like starting pitching, hopefully it can come back around. The hitting, they're not going to get the 8 to 10 runs. That's why early in the season when they were just racking up runs and they were a top three offense in terms of scoring runs, I was like, this isn't going to last. So if the Giants are going to rely on scoring, you know, at that point, almost 6 runs a game, I think it through like 20 games, they were like 5.7 runs a game. It was like, this isn't going to last. When we talk about what's going to last with the Giants and what's not, that wasn't going to last. But then you look at below that, Carson Wisenhunt, likely to win pitcher of the week, 14 innings this week. And then yesterday, 7 innings pitched, one run, not earned, 5 strikeouts, et cetera. He's pitching well down there. So my point in bringing that up is, and I'm going to bring up Verlander in just a second, all of a sudden you look at the Giants from a pitching standpoint. All right. Logan Webb is Logan Webb. Robbie Ray is pitching great. We're going to have to find out on Verlander. I'm a big Birdsong guy. Kyle Harrison is back up here. Look at Wisenhunt is doing. We'll see on Landon Root. But they've got a lot of depth, a lot of good young depth in this organization. And Ray and Logan Webb are 1 and 2. If you can get a solid 3, and I don't know if Verlander is ever going to be that. He's pitched certainly better or good enough to win a couple of games, which he has not done, which I'm sure he's very frustrated about. He's got a cryptic injury, which we'll get into in just a second. But as if we look at this and say, can they sustain? I'm nervous that the bullpen is going to get is just going to flame out, only because it's going to get burned out, because they've got to have more from the starting rotation. So if I'm the Giants, and this is the one thing I complained about consistently as far as Hicks was concerned, was that you just don't have time. You know, you don't have time to sit there and wait and wait and wait and wait and wait. Birdsong is ready now. You got to see what he is, because you've got to get three really – the way it works is they've got two hammer starters at the top. If your third can be a solid guy, at least eating up innings, keeping you in a game, that's good. If your fourth can be consistently good, doesn't need to be great, and your fifth is going to kind of always going to rotate, you know, you never know what you're going to get out of your fifth starter. It's kind of like a box of chocolates. So that's what your fifth starter is going to be. So I can live with that. You don't have to have 5 hammer starters. It'd be nice, but you have a couple. You have a solid 3. You get a 4 that's pretty solid, and then your 5 is kind of going to be a wild card. That's just most rotations aren't even that good. So if they can do that, make it so that bullpen is not overused, even though last year it was used quite a bit. This year it's on the same kind of a par. You just don't want to burn these guys out at the end of the year, but that's why I think Hicks is a big deal, because not only can Hicks go long, he stretched out, I understand that, but if he had to go short, I mean, start thinking about this. Hopefully Ryan Walker gets mentally back in the game. He did get the save yesterday. Duvall has turned it around. Randy Rodriguez has been great. Eric Miller has been great. And all of a sudden you're like, the only guys who make me, Rodgers has been great. The only guys who make me consistently nervous in the pen, Walker, but I think he's going to get it back together. I'm not a huge Bivens guy, but if you add the power to Hicks to this thing, especially mid to late in games at critical points, and the way that analytics work nowadays, you might have a critical point in the 6th inning where you might have to use that guy. All of a sudden you can use Hicks now throwing over 100. Now he can just let it loose. You can use Rodriguez. You can use Duvall. You can use Walker. You can use, now Rodgers is coming in, you know, in the midst of a bunch of guys gassing it up there 100 miles an hour. It's a really, really good bullpen. They just can't be overused. So that's where I'm on that. Let me play Verlander. This is weird. So this is post-game yesterday. It was not great. Velocity was down a little bit, but he explains it, but he doesn't want to say what the injury is. Here you go. Here's Justin Verlander after yesterday's kind of start.
With something physically that the team was aware of, you know, was able to work through. Didn't feel like I was going to put myself at risk for injury, but clearly it was kind of affecting my velocity and mechanics. I'd rather not.
Is it anything that you have concerns about going forward?
I don't think so. I'm pretty optimistic that I'll be able to get over it and make my next start. Great training staff. I've been really talking with them a lot, and hopefully it's a.
A lot of times, and you know this, you don't need me to tell you, but I'm just going to remind you, what happens as a reporter is it's not so much a lot of times what someone says, because I could tell you in sports all the time, Lion season 24/7, 365. Justin Verlander doesn't want to tell you what the injury is. So the red flag goes up automatically right there. Like, Justin, what's the injury? If it was just, hey, this felt off, that felt off, this is a strain, that's it, you know, whatever. It's not like he's a quarterback and doesn't want to tell an injury because he doesn't want a defender targeting his ribs or pulling on his ankle or something like that. Like, what's the big deal? You could tell us what the injury is, but he doesn't. And so right now, right away, when someone's being cryptic like that, automatically as a reporter, the antennas go up, the red flags go up, and you think to yourself, okay, this isn't good. And then the second part of it is just how he looks frustrated in what he's saying. It's how he's saying what he's saying. He's not saying anything, but what he's saying is, I don't think it's going to be a long-term thing, and we have a really good staff, medical staff here, this. Well, you're not telling us. B, you look pissed off. So obviously there's a frustration there, and I wouldn't be surprised whatsoever if either he misses his next start or he goes on the injured list or something. And like I said, I don't think that's the worst thing in the world, because Justin Verlander so far has been great. Now, he hasn't had a whole lot of luck. You know, he's had some games in which the defense wasn't very good behind him or whatever the case may be, but it is what it is. You don't have any wins. You have a 4.33 ERA. Your analytics are better than that. I understand that. But at the age of 42, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. Like I said, just given the depth of the Giants to see what they have. All right, Wisenhunt looks really, really good. Let's see what he is. Kyle Harrison is back. He had injuries and sickness and so forth, or sickness, I should say, in spring training. Where's he at? Like it's not a bad time, bad point of the season to say, okay, Logan Webb's Logan Webb. Robbie Ray's been great. After that, we're not really sure. So Birdsong's going to get a shot. Could he be a three? He could. He's got the stuff. He's got the mentality, no matter his age. Yeah, let's see what Kyle Harrison is now. You know, he's ticking it up a little bit. Is he going to be a bullpen piece long term? Is he in a piece that you move potentially for a first baseman? Let's see. You know, is Wisenhunt a legit? Let's see what he's got. You know, out of necessity last year because of the injuries, they brought up guys in Mason Black and so forth that just weren't ready to pitch at this level. But Wisenhunt looks like he is. Harrison already has. Birdsong, I think, is going to be, could be that legit three guy. So if Verlander's hurt, I don't love hearing that. You know this if you've watched the show with any regularity. I wasn't a huge fan of the signing. $15 million isn't a ton, but for the Giants, that's a fair amount of money to give up. It's not that I don't like Justin Verlander. I don't like Justin Verlander at 42. And it seems like a lot of things are just starting to pop up here. So it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world to say, hey, let's put Justin on the shelf for a minute, short term. And not only will we see what's going on with him, look under the hood as far as Justin Verlander is concerned, but we're also going to see Wisenhunt has, this is the best he's ever pitched in his career. Let's see what he is. Let's see what Harrison is. Let's, you know, Birdsong's already in it. Let's just see what some of these young guys are at this point of the season. We're playing above expectations. It's not like Verlander's giving us a ton of innings when he goes out there. So I think it would be a great time for Verlander to, you know, take a break for a minute and see exactly what's going on. Maybe there's some mechanical issues. Maybe there's a couple of minor injury type things, but you can just tell the fact that he's not telling, and B, he's frustrated, that there's clearly something more than what he's saying. So I would not be surprised if he missed his next start. We'll see, but it certainly sounds like, I mean, instincts just tell you that's pretty simple. He's not going to make his next start, but I could be wrong. Birdsong in, I've already beat that horse to death. He's got a 2.31 ERA. He's been absolutely dominant at points. I've told you last year I was out on the patio doing a show at Oracle and was just incredibly impressed by this kid's maturity. He's from the Chicago area. His family grew up as Cubs fans in the midst of like the, you know, that triangle where it's like, are you a Cubs fan? Are you a Sox fan? Are you a Cardinals fan? Just a really matter of fact, really interesting guy. And then a lot of times what happens is, when you talk to young players, especially in that atmosphere, now remember, there's a bunch of fans sitting around, they're drinking, and we're trying to have some fun with them. And sometimes they'll just clam up, like they'll focus on you, and they're not getting very much. That's kind of how young players are. They haven't lived a lot. So you're like, okay, well, what experiences do you have? They just answer exactly what you say. But he was very thoughtful, very smart, very mature. I think he's going to handle this very, very well. And I think he's going to pitch very, very well. So we'll see. Plus, it doesn't hurt that he's, you know, jacking up 98 and can bend it and do the things that he can. So I got a lot of confidence in Birdsong. As far as let me just pop this up. So we didn't get an opportunity, you and I, to do the quarter point of the season discussion about the, I mean, we could have, but we didn't. There was so much going on that I just didn't really get an opportunity. Like I said, that's an excuse. But what I had seen was, let me see here. Are those the numbers? Let's see. Yeah, I think that's right. I think I'll share the relief. There we go. So, again, I love doing this every once in a while. These are the numbers. Now, again, what kind of grade you'd give the Giants? I think overall an A. But here's why I think that the Giants can do this long term. Patrick Bailey, if he hits 185 the rest of the season, I guess I can live with it. You know, he did get a single yesterday. I'm well aware. Thank you very much for reminding me. Lamont Wade Jr. got a pinch hit triple. Way to go, Lamont. Even a blind squirrel gets a nut every once in a while. Still 165. So they got to fix that. This is what I mean. First base, not great. Fitzgerald got off to a slow start, then got hurt. I think he can even be better. He's hitting 295 with almost an 800 OPS. Great to have him back in the lineup quickly. This is another one, Willy Adames. This isn't the guy that you signed, a 223 hitter right now with five home runs. He's going to be better. He has to be. Matt Chapman doesn't have a terrible OPS, and anytime you look at WAR, just because he's so good defensively, Matt Chapman is always going to be a positive. But if I had to grade Matt Chapman, like if we're giving out grades, average is C, right? He's much better than this. So defensively, he is what he is, but he's hitting 222. Matt Chapman can be much better. So I'm going to grade on a difficult curve. I'm going to say a D. I think Matt Chapman, because C is average. He's not playing average baseball. He's playing below average baseball. So if you look at those first few guys, Bailey can play better. Wade can play better. Fitzgerald can be healthy. Adames can play better. Chapman can play better. So the first five guys that we mentioned are the infield can all play better, even though the Giants are right on the doorstep of the Dodgers, which is amazing to me. Ramos is playing, I'd say, B-plus baseball. I'd say that Jung-Hoo Lee, he's kind of hit the skids a little bit, but still, I'd say that Jung-Hoo Lee I would put as, I don't know, A-minus, B-plus, based on what I thought. There's nothing but an A for Mike Yastrzemski to this point. Yastrzemski's, to me, is having his best stretch as a Giant, and he was really good when he first got to the team, but an 820 OPS. He always plays great defense. A-plus Wilmer Flores, 10 home runs, 42 RBIs. I'd have taken that for the entire season from Wilmer Flores. And so he's lead the league in RBIs. I mean, that's why that 42 is dark, is because he's leading the league in RBIs, which is ridiculous. So just let me just go through that. This is generally what the batting order is. Bailey can be better. Wade Jr. can be better. Fitzgerald can be healthy. Adames can be better. Chapman can be better. Ramos is playing above his level, but I think he could still do this. Jung-Hoo Lee is kind of settled in a little bit. Yastrzemski's playing his baseball, best baseball, and Flores has been out of this world. So there's really, of those nine that are generally in the lineup every day, Yastrzemski and Flores are the only ones that you'd say are way above their skis. Now, and even Yastrzemski might be able to pull this off for the entire season. Flores, I doubt it. But Lee Ramos can play this way. And like I said, the infield, all those guys can be better. So you ask yourself the question, can the Giants sustain this? Well, from an offensive standpoint, they can actually be better. As far as Koss and Matos and Huff and VR and Schmidt and the rest of these guys, whatever. I mean, it would be nice to have a better bench, but most of these most teams run into this problem. Koss is not a major leaguer at this point. Matos never gets enough at bats. Huff, I'm not a fan of. VR is a 4A player to me. Schmidt's hurt, Wisely, whatever. So I'm not overly concerned about any of those guys. Now, as far as pitching is concerned, we've already established. I guess we'll do this in order. Webb is Webb. Verlander can be better. I think that it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world, like I said, if Verlander took a couple of weeks off. Robbie Ray has been as good as you could possibly. And again, maybe I'm jaded in that he's 6-0. And when you look at six wins, that should mean nothing, but winning is the name of the game. But the fact that he's made 9 starts so far, he keeps you in every game. He's had a couple of clunkers, but generally good. And then it kind of gets weird from here. Landon Roop up and down, Jordan Hicks out of the rotation, and then you get to the bullpen. And this is, again, why I think they can continue this. Walker can be better. Duvall, can he keep a 125 ERA? Probably not, but still solid. Tyler Rogers, solid. Randy Rodriguez, big surprise, an 092. I mean, that's an all-star setup, man, right there. Eric Miller has pitched better than he has ever pitched as a Giant. Can he maintain that? The key to the bullpen to me, and then we go down to Birdsong, and I'm not the biggest Bivens guy. Trevino's gone. Harrison, we'll see, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The only concern I have, I think the bullpen can continue to do this at this level. They have a 2.59 ERA, which is number one in baseball. Does the bullpen? They can keep this going, and now you add Hicks. My concern is burnout. You know, can they bring in a couple of guys from the minors at some point to even to just take some innings? Because these guys are constantly being relied on in the bullpen. And last year, I think the Giants had what, the second most innings pitched from the bullpen, I think only behind the Tigers last year. I'm doing that off the top of my head, but I think it's accurate. So you've basically got, you got Webb and Ray that are in the bank, and then Verlander, I don't know, and Roop, I don't know, and Hicks, I don't know, and Birdsong, I don't know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You can't have two knowns and four unknowns or three unknowns in your rotation. That's going to be, that could be the undoing of the Giants. But I do have, maybe it's because of Verlander's name or Ray's name or whatever, but I feel good about the starting rotation if they can mix some of this youth in there. If you know, if they can get Harrison in there, he's decent. If Birdsong, so we're back to the if thing that I hate, but I do think that if there's any big if, the hitting can actually be better. The bullpen has been absolutely hammer a godsend, but can the rotation find others other than Webb and Ray? That's the big question, and they can stay in it if they can. And that means to me, they've got money under the number. They can get themselves a first baseman. They're going to try out what they have on the inside as far as the rotation, but that's another thing. If they can't get consistency out of a Verlander or a Birdsong or, you know, a Wizen Hunt coming up, then they've got to go out and they got to get a third, as crazy as that sounds. So they may have to do that. I was an advocate, like I said, to go get Jack Flaherty, who's pitching in Detroit, and they have the best record in the American League. So he's not going anywhere, but I'm just saying they can get a mid-rotation starter at some point if they need to, and they might need to. So that's my thought on the Giants at the quarter point. Overall, you'd have to give them an A. I mean, they're right there. They're knocking on the door, like I said, of the Dodgers. But as I go over this thing, I think to myself, they can do better. You know, they can do more. And as crazy as that sounds, that's, I'm looking at them. And let me just pop up one more thing just to get you caught up on what the standings look like today. And at this point of the season, you're like 100% you would take these standings. When you're like, are you kidding me? Stats, standings. There we go. I got a bunch of windows open. I got to fix that. Anyway, the only reason I put wild card up there is the Dodgers aren't that far ahead. As you look, 29 and 18, they got swept by the Angels over the weekend. So, I mean, you look in the loss column, which is where I look, you're one behind the Dodgers in the loss. The Mets are legit, which could make your wild card tougher because of the Phillies, and I know the Braves are coming. So the Braves are not going to just sit down there. They're 24 and 23. I think they're going to be fine. So there's your three division leaders. Phillies are legit. Padres are legit. Padres got swept over the weekend too, which was nice. They said that the Giants, and same thing. Cardinals are going to be legit. Arizona's going to stay in it. Atlanta's going to stay in it. I don't know about any of these teams. That's why, like I said, I've said this before, I would call Milwaukee and just say, look, you're not going to need Rhys Hoskins. It's a mutual decision next year that you're going to turn down. He's from Sacramento. We need a first baseman. I don't want to wait till July. What is it going to take? Now, I'm not trading, you know, a Wizen Hunt or something like that, but I've got some lower level pitching, and you look at Milwaukee, and I'm not giving up Bryce Eldridge or anything like that, but I've said this before, Hoskins makes sense. He has an $18 million deal that at this point of the season is more like 12, plus it's a mutual option for next year, so you could just turn it down. If Bryce Eldridge is ready to go, you're ready to go. If not, then you pick up that option for one more year on him. It's the perfect thing. He wants to come back to the he's from Sacramento, but he wants to come to the Bay Area. He wants to come to Northern California. Makes a lot of sense. So I don't think they're in it. They're at 22 and 25. Nationals, Marlins, Pirates, and, of course, Rockies. Those teams are all out of it at the bottom. Reds are kind of teetering, but they've got talent. We've seen it. Reds do have talent. So I think from a standpoint of the division winners, that looks about right. Although, again, I think that the Philly can get into that. Obviously, Philly's right there. I even think the Braves can get in there, but those are three teams you're going to have to deal with. Mets, Phillies, and Braves from the East. Cubs, Cardinals, I think that's probably it. Maybe the Reds from the Central, and then we know all about the West. Padres, Giants, Diamondbacks, they're all going to be in it. So it isn't going to be easy for the Giants. That's the one downfall, as you look at their record right there. The downfall is this is going to be a hell of a race, but in terms of saying can the Giants stay in it, I think they can even play better. So give me your thoughts on the Giants to this point. I know we're a little bit late on the quarter poll because quarter poll is 40 games, and we're way beyond that. But like I said, because so many things are going on, we went a little past the 40 games. So that's where we are as far as the Giants are concerned. I don't know that we've spent, we're 40 minutes into the show. I don't know that we've spent 40 minutes on the Giants, but they sweep the A's. We didn't get to the quarter pole point. There's some interesting things going on with Hicks out of the rotation and Birdsong in, plus Justin Verlander's dealing with kind of a, mystery injury. Plus, I wanted to ask you about Bob Melvin and what you think of the series, A's, Giants. I don't know, for now at least, I look at the two uniforms, been to enough games on both sides, both in Oakland and in San Francisco, to know that, I don't know, there's still something there. We'll see when it moves to Vegas, but for now, still something there. So, episode 143, as far as the Giants, Giants sweep, Wilmer and Ramos, Birdsong is in, Verlander, it's weird, and I just gave you the quarter poll update on the Giants. Before we move on to that and Brock reaction to his contract, which we did a breaking news show on Friday, right? We did a breaking news show on Friday. Friday, we did three shows, by the way. If you didn't see the show on Saturday, we did the normal show at 8 a.m. We did a breaking Brock Purdy signs a new five-year, $265 million contract with $181 guaranteed about 3 o'clock on Friday. Then we did Bottom of the Pine on Friday night. Then we did a Saturday morning shorty show, which we just did. We just say hello on Saturday. So anyway, yeah, we were busy over the weekend. So we'll get to Brock, and Brock reacts. And like I said, an interesting comment over the weekend that, you know what? I'll take the heart. I thought it was really interesting. Hi, Fuji. It's good to see you, man. And again, anytime you want to get guaranteed that your thoughts get up on the board for the show, hit me up with a super. Much appreciated. Bottom of the Pint merchandise. Ooh, I need, it's not a Lady Bear koozie with the grill. I need to, I probably, this cord isn't long enough. I almost feel like taking my, I don't think I can even do it to the window. Because you know what I could do is take this camera that I'm using and put it to the window, but I don't think I can do that. You know what I might be able to do? Because I have my grills nice and lined up right now, and they have the covers on them. Like, it's a typical, you know, it's a typical Monday. And I've said forever I was going to show you the thing with the cam, but I could probably, I'll do it tomorrow. Bottom of the pot. You know what? Is Dom here today? I've not done roll call today. I wonder if Dom is here. He's the one who came up with the bottom of the pint logo, which is outstanding, by the way. And he's always hit me up going, hey, and I'm just, you know, he's like, hey, let's do merchandise. Let's do it. Cause he's done it for Paulie. And let me see if I can say hello, see if he's in here today. Cause if he is, I mean, he's the one I got. Yeah, there he is right there. I got to get with Dom, man. And seriously get that as a priority. Cause I do have merch, obviously. Yeah, there you are. I do have merch on the website if you go to johnlundunleashed.com. But I did, bottom of the pint is cool because of his logo. There he is. Hey, what's going on? Yeah, Dom is great. His logos and stuff are absolutely great. I can't chug a beer on, I mean, I could chug a beer on Monday. Of course, I could chug a beer anytime I wanted, but I'm trying to be a responsible adult on Monday. I have a lot of stuff going on today. But yeah, during the week, you know, at some point, you know what my wife had yesterday, by the way, Dom? See, this is where the random things come in, and we'll hit up Brock Purdy in just a second. I did not have it. I tried it. Like I told you, there was a great beer garden in Santa Cruz yesterday, and we're sitting on the water and we're having a good time. Like I said, the fold out chairs and everything was just hilarious. Great, beautiful day. And my wife's not a big beer drinker, but because it was a beer garden, it's all they had. By the way, my son turned 21. He had been down in Arizona. I hadn't had a chance. Yesterday was the first legal beer that I had with my son. How cool is that feeling, by the way? I had like an amber type of it. Like I said, it was a Santa Cruz Brewing Company. I'm sorry that I can't remember the name, but great beer. And yeah, we had in fact, I have a picture of it. But yeah, we had his first, I mean, he's had plenty of legal and illegal beers, but, our first legal beer together. Let me see if I can find the picture here, which was really cool. Yeah, this is it right here. Hang on a second. I don't even know if I put this on the screen, I don't even know if you can even see it, but there you go. First legal beer down there in Santa Cruz on the air right there. Look at that. That was beautiful. Like I said, the little fold out chairs and stuff like that. It was amazing, but that was yesterday. But anyway, so my wife had a tomato beer, you know, Michelada or whatever they call them. And she had a few sips and she's like, it wasn't as good as I remember it being. Cause I've never been a huge fan of that. She loves them generally, but yesterday she just said it was okay. But yeah, she loves those things. Not for me. So, I mean, I could do something like that in the morning. Maybe I'll do that later in the week. Early in the week, it's tough because you got so much going on. By like Thursday, Friday, you start feeling it. You start feeling the weekend. I'll do something like that then. So we can do something like that. Anything I missed as far as Giants were concerned? I think I got everything as far as that goes. Okay, as far as Brock goes, because again, we did the emergency show. Is this the emergency? No, that was episode 42. Do I have the Oh, there it is right there. So we did the show on Friday. We did the emergency show on Friday. Purdy got paid, and we discussed it. And if you weren't around, 5 years, $265 million, $181 million guaranteed. John Lund unleashed, I don't know, a couple months ago, I wrote that I thought he would get $190 million guaranteed, and I thought that he would get, what was the number that I put? I thought he would be going to get like $290 million. I thought he was going to get just short of $60 million. I certainly thought he would get more than $55 million. So if you're not with us Friday, not with us Saturday, I think this is a deal where Brock Purdy essentially said, I want to be here. $53 million is fine. $181 million guaranteed is fine. The 181 surprised me because Trevor Lawrence got 200 and Trevor Lawrence got 55 a year. And to me, he's better. I mean, he's just flat out better. In fact, I did this on Saturday. Let me throw this up for you and then explain. I just wrote this up. You can hate my list, whatever. I don't really care about lists, but I'm just doing this as a general rule. So Mahomes, Allen, Jackson, Joe Burrow, those are the four top quarterbacks in the league, period. You can put them in whatever order you want. It's not really debatable. Those are the top four. And then at this point, you go into tier two. On any given Sunday, 5 through 10 could be these guys. Or in this case, what, 4, 5 through 12. Stafford, Hurts, Purdy, Daniels, Herbert, Love, Goff, Dak. Now, you can hate those guys, but it's some way, shape, or form, that's probably the next tier. Stafford with the arm. Hurts has got a lot of talent around him, doesn't read it like Brock. Brock's superpower, people can't understand it. It's a mental superpower. Jaden Daniels, I still want to see him do it for one more year because C.J. Stroud was in this position last year, and Stroud wasn't very good last year in Houston, so let's see. Justin Herbert is the most physically gifted of the group but isn't always consistent. Jordan Love is physically gifted but always isn't consistent. Goff needs perfection around him. With Detroit, and they play inside, and they got all that talent, and Dak's been hurt a lot, so maybe you drop Dak down. But when Dak's good, he can be very good. Now, this tier three, you could put Murray into tier two. He can have certain games like that and be a huge pain. He is to the 49ers. Stroud could jump back up there. There's no doubt. Darnold, let's see you do it again. Baker Mayfield deserves to be there. He's solid. Geno Smith, solid. We'll see what he does with the Raiders. And Trevor Lawrence, to me, has all the potential in the world to be at least tier two, but he just hasn't done it yet. And the thing that's funny, and I bring up Trevor Lawrence a lot, then whatever, Rodgers, Wilson, Cousins, old, May and Caleb Williams haven't done it yet. Bryce Young should probably be in the next tier. The Saints, the Colts, and the Browns have dumpster fires at quarterbacks. And I don't know about Tennessee or Atlanta. Penix and Ward, we just don't know. So that's basically it. You can screw around with it a little bit. My point is, and I'm going to keep Trevor Lawrence in my thought here for a second. So that's mine, whatever, you know, who cares, whatever, who's ever list. I just know the top four are the top four, right? And then Brock Purdy on any given Sunday could be the fifth best. He could be the 10th best. Justin Herbert could be the fifth best. Stafford could be the fifth best. Like, it's just, it's a crapshoot after that. It just depends week to week. There's no consensus. And anybody who says that there is crazy. Now, you could put Justin Herbert there because Justin Herbert has the most, say it with me, potential, but he isn't always the best quarterback. And Brock Purdy and he could not be more different physically. A guy who can throw it through the wall and looks the exact position, you know, part 6'6", 240. That's not Brock Purdy, but then Brock Purdy can see it a lot faster than a Herbert, see it a lot faster than a Hurts, you know, something like that. Hurts a year ago was like, well, can the guy, you know, he's gone up and down. It just depends, but he's got a ton of talent around him. So anyway, point being is that I never watch the morning shows on ESPN or Fox or anything like that. Like I said, I've seen it. I've been behind the scenes. It's preconceived. It's you say this, you say that. It's, you know, it's like wrestling, to be honest with you. Those shows are like wrestling. Guys come up with stuff and people watch and they think they're, you know, they have any insight or anything. They're just blabbing and yapping and they're trying to get ratings. And I have no issue with it whatsoever, as long as you understand what it is. It's not real media. It's for clicks. And I understand that. I understand it completely, and that's fine. So when people come up with lists or this or that, it's just for clicks and those kind of things. So I shouldn't be bothered by it. And this is what I said at the beginning of the show. Somebody said in a comment after Saturday's show, because Saturday's cover of the show was haters gonna hate. So this was Saturday's show, right? episode 142, Haters Gonna Hate, and I talked about, you know, what the reaction was, what I had seen, what the reaction was. We played some videos from some of the reaction of it. They're going to regret this. They're going to regret that. And it makes me laugh because every successful team, for the most part, has a $40, $50, $60 million quarterback. That's just what it is nowadays. And they win Super Bowls. So when people come out and go, well, if the Niners pay Brock Purdy, they're not going to be able to win Super Bowls. Well, the first year of his deal, and we haven't seen it fully yet, he's not going to go from, you know, it's not, he's not a race car. He's not going to go from 0 to 60. That's not, or 0 to 53 in this case. He's not. His first year of his deal will probably be like $10 million as far as the cap is concerned. Then it will slowly go up. And then, as I always tell you, when it goes to an astronomical number, that's when the contract's over and they'll renegotiate it. But the reason they, you know, it's 265 and it's 53 a year and everybody's jumping up and down, he's not going to see $265 million. The guarantee is $181 million. That's what he's going to see. So whatever the 53 is per year and whatever the, you know, 265 is, he's not going to see that. That's so that an agent can jump up and down and say, I got Brock Purdy top 10 money. Now, as far as the haters are going to hate kind of a thing, I don't know how anybody could hate on Brock Purdy today. Even Mike Florio, who doesn't know shit about the quarterback situation with the 49ers, has no insight or moles or anything else within the 49ers organization, because every time he talks about the 49ers quarterback situation, from Tom Brady to Kirk Cousins to anybody he talks about to Aaron Rodgers, he's always 100% wrong. He may have some insight into other places, but the first thing he said was basically a negative column that was pretty predictable that said they couldn't win if they paid Brock Purdy this money. And it's like, okay. He's a top 10 quarterback, sometimes a top 5 quarterback, sometimes a top 8 quarterback, sometimes the 12th quarterback, and he's getting paid along those lines. Who has a problem with that? They shouldn't. Nobody should have any. So in this comment, someone said to me, why do you care? I thought to myself, you're right. I say that all the time to everyone. I always go, why does anyone care? Like, who cares? Honestly, who cares how somebody has the 49ers ranked? Who cares what the QB, you know, rankings are? Who cares what the tiers are? Who cares? Like, I do. I live kind of philosophically from a sports standpoint of I don't care. I don't care what Stephen A. says. I don't care what Kendrick Perkins says. I don't care what Dan Orlovsky says. I don't. I don't care what any of those people say. Because as insightful as some may be and others may not, they're not in the building. They don't have the insights. They don't have, you know. Chris Sims is as close as you can get to Kyle Shanahan as far as the media is concerned. Does Chris Sims nail the picks for the Niners? Does Chris Sims come up with great insights that all of a sudden you go, oh, Chris Sims must have knew something? I can't remember a time that it was like, oh, man, because he and Kyle are really, really good friends. They have matching freaking tattoos. Like, that's about as inside as a friend as you can get. Does Chris Sims ever break 49ers news? Does Chris Sims ever get the pick right for the 49ers? Does Chris Sims ever go? Like, he should have a pipeline right to the 49ers, shouldn't he? Shouldn't Chris Sims be busting 49ers news left and right, right and left? But he tells you right out, Kyle tells me nothing, nothing. And so you look at his quarterback rankings or any of the way don't get me wrong, he's got some insights, and I'm sure they talk about certain things. But Kyle keeps it way, way, way away from him. So it's not like people are breaking a bunch of news around this team. So there you go. Anyway, I should heed my own advice, because I constantly am like, I don't care. And then when it comes to Purdy, I don't know why. And I think we as a media, I think we as fans are very defensive of him, because as I pointed this out on Saturday, I just think the story is such a cool story that it's almost a Disney movie. Gets picked 262, gets a contract for 265. Comes from nowhere. You know, he wasn't recruited very highly, goes from Arizona to Iowa State, plays good, not great football. The Big 12 doesn't have any defense anyway. I watched Brock Purdy, I don't know, 6 or 8 times in college, and then after they drafted him a ton. But, you know, I watched Brock Purdy enough in college to have an opinion of him. Maybe 10 times I watched him. But my thought was always, like, I watched that Baker Mayfield shootout against Oklahoma versus Iowa State. Like, I saw him in games against Texas Tech, and it's the same thing was, well, the Big 12 doesn't have any defense. How the hell do I know? You know, how do I know if the guy could play? He was solid. He wasn't spectacular. When they drafted him, I thought, oh, okay, interesting, but never thought of a big thing about it. So for him to turn into what he's turned into and the type of guy that he is on and off the field, and I've interviewed him a dozen times, and one-on-one, we've gone down to training camp, good guy, funny guy, stares at the floor. It's kind of weird. But then the guys will tell you on the team that he's kind of Clark Kent Superman, gets in that huddle, and he's just totally different. So Look, I think everything about him, and I don't know him. Maybe all of a sudden it's going to come out that Brock Purdy isn't a good guy. But for right now, and I said this on Saturday, and some people misconstrued it, I'm not saying he has the talent level of a Steph Curry. I'm saying he has the character of him as a person. Like, it does matter whether you think it does or not. It does matter that not only Brock Purdy on the field performs well for this money, but off the field. He's the face of your franchise. Whether you like it or not as a quarterback, what your quarterback does sets the tone for your organization. So if you look at the Cleveland Browns, as long as Deshaun Watson's around, I don't care. You can bring in Shedeur Sanders. You can bring in Kenny Pickett. You can bring in Dylan Gabriel. Deshaun Watson's still there. And the reason he's been a dumpster fire for the most of the time that he's been there is because he's a bad dude. And this is how it goes. You know, your quarterback sets a tone for your organization. Think about Brady and the Patriots. Think about Peyton Manning in Indianapolis when he was there. These guys are the face of the franchise. So you're paying them to play. You're paying them to play really well. That's the major part of this whole thing. But it's different than being a guard or an offensive tackle or an edge rusher or a linebacker or a safety or any other position. Those guys aren't the face of the franchise. They might want to be. George Kittle has the personality to be a face of a franchise, but he plays tight end. He doesn't play quarterback. When they do the graphics, a team's going to play a certain team, Cowboys are going to play the Niners. There's a picture of Dak and there's a picture of Purdy. I mean, that's just what it is. They're the face of the franchise. So if I'm Jed York, yeah, 90% of this stuff is how do you perform on the field? Nice guys finish last. I don't care if there's a nice guy. He's the nicest guy, the best guy. You'd want your daughter to marry him, all that kind of stuff. He's not getting $265 million. But it's a big deal when Jed York decides, okay, I'm gonna rubber stamp this check or actually sign this check, however they do it. Probably rubber stamp, not gonna sign it. That I get it. I'm okay giving Brock Purdy this money because he's a good dude. You know, part of the reason I think they struggled with Brandon Ayuk, not that he's not a good dude because he is, but he kind of turned into something different there for a minute during those negotiations. And I don't think they liked giving him the money, to be honest with you. But, you know, you want to feel good about it. And I think a guy like Brock Purdy, you're not going to have to wake up in the middle of the night and thinking, where is he? Is he in the clubs? Is he screwing around? You know, the only thing he's probably going to do with that money is to sock a lot of it away. His parents can probably live a little bit better of a life. And he's probably going to get the best Toyota there possibly is, but it's not going to have big old rims on it and everything like that. It's going to be like the highest end dad Sequoia that you can find. That's what he's going to do. And his wardrobe's not going to change. He's not going to go from the Sears catalog to, you know, he's not going to do that. He's not going to walk in looking like Debo used to look and big chains and all that kind of stuff. That's just not his personality. He's not going to do that. He's going to have a bunch of money socked away and about 20 generations of his family are going to be able to live off it. And that's just going to be Brock Purdy, man. Nothing's going to change a whole hell of a lot. He's going to walk up to the podium with a pair of, you know, faded Levi's on or whatever. And then, you know, whatever kind of a shirt. And his hair is going to be the same, and his attire is going to be the same. And like I said, it's going to be a new Sequoia, maybe one of those ones that he got for his offensive lineman. That's about it. Maybe it's going to be tricked out a little bit. Maybe he'll splurge for the, you know, super tinted windows so that people won't know that it's him. But they'll know it's him because it's going to be a Sequoia. Nobody else is driving a Sequoia. Are those offensive linemen? Maybe those offensive linemen are driving them. But that's about it. Anyway. There's Brock Reacts, Brock Reaction. Give me your thoughts on Brock Purdy. And again, we did an emergency show Friday. We did a lot of it on Saturday. And maybe I just learned my lesson on that one. As far as Fred Warner is concerned, I was never concerned. Now, has anything happened on that? Let me just double check something real quick. Because I don't think anything has happened today on Fred Warner. I could be 100% wrong on that. But I told you the last thing that was going to happen as far as the 49ers of the offseason was that Fred Warner was going to get a deal done. We were down there about a month ago, and we asked him all sorts of questions, offseason, this, that, your son, blah, blah, blah. And I think it was Cam Inman who said, what about your deal? Everybody's been talking about Brock. Everybody's been talking about Kittle. Those deals weren't done at that point, and they are now, obviously. And so now he is front and center. And I'm not going to say he laughed it off, but he kind of went, I'm not, and this is the tone he did. He's like, I'm not even worried about it. I'm not worried about it in the slightest. And he said something to the extent of, I get paid a lot of money and I'm fine. I'll be fine. And last year, like I said, his cap number was 12.6. This year it jumped up to 29. Like I said, when you read a contract, you'll know when it's really over the contract, when it has an inordinate, just a crazy jump in it. And his jumps from 12.6 to 29, then it's 26.7 after that. It's getting renegotiated. that's the last thing they have to do in this offseason. I mean, I'd like to see, you know, a couple other pieces shake free. You'd like to see something like that. But as far as a major piece is concerned, this is it. So criticize the Niners offseason all you want. They got rid of a lot of, just to kind of recap it, they got rid of a lot of names that weren't playing to that level, and it frustrated Jed York, so he did, got rid of them. Dre Greenlaw, to me, is the only one who's going to hurt a lot. Frustrated that they didn't get more, a more fortified offensive line. I don't think there's any question about it. I would have liked to have seen them get a future for Trent Williams, would have liked to have seen him fortify the interior of the offensive line. That's not how the draft fell for them. They picked up a couple of guys late in free agency, guys like Andre Dillard, who, you know, he's a first-round pick out of Washington State by the Eagles. I've seen him play in the pros. It hasn't been pretty, but the 49ers are trying. So, look, I'm not giving them a passing grade on that, but short of that, they fortified their defensive line. Now it's up to the players. They could have as many as three starting defensive linemen that are rookies. We'll see what Nick Martin is. I'm concerned about the secondary because of Mustafa. All those things are on the defensive side. They fortified special teams at a really high level, although I don't think Greg Joseph or the kicker out of Louisiana Tech who won the Lou Groza, who's like 250 pounds, I don't think that's enough to challenge Jake Moody, and I would have gone in another direction. No, not Justin Tucker, but I would have went in another direction as far as that goes. And then offensively, I just think it comes down to health as far as their skill position players. And then I think this is the biggest thing of the offseason other than individually signing Brock, which is hopefully there's a philosophical change with the 49ers, which is this July, August, September contract signing, that ain't going to work for us anymore, man. We can't do this. We can't be waiting and waiting and waiting and setting tones like we did in 24. We had a hold in with Ayuk that was weird. We had a hold out with Trent Williams, which was weird. These things have got to get done more quickly, more efficiently. And so all of a sudden you're seeing George Kittle deal get done early May, and you're seeing Brock Purdy get done middle of May, and you're seeing right after that Fred Warner. They're not dragging the Fred Warner stuff out, doesn't sound like. I think Jennifer Lee Chan, again, was the one who reported this. But it sounds like they're dotting I's, crossing T's on Fred Warner. I don't have any insight on Warner. I did on Kittle. We got an inkling on Brock late in the process. But that whole thing was pretty obvious that he was showing up at those things and they were having positive discussions. So Fred Warner's the same. So they're going to dot I's, cross T's. They're going to have Warner done, I'm sure, by the end of the month. So all of a sudden you're sitting there for that month in June, and it's not like Ayuk last year, and it's not like Trent Williams, and everybody's going to be in camp. And hopefully it's going to be kumbaya. And then you put on top of that an easy schedule, and all of a sudden it just seems, maybe I'm wrong, you tell me if I'm wrong, that this, I don't know, it's not a momentum thing, but all this negative, 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 and they're no good, all of a sudden it's like, wow, they got an easy schedule. They got Brock done. They got Kittle done. They got Warner done. You know, they fortified the defense. Now we'll see. Because to me, they're going to score points. They'll be a top five offense this year, even with the questions along the offensive line. If general health happens, they'll be a top five offense. In terms of defense, I don't know. How much magic can Robert Saleh spin? That's, to me, that's everything for this thing. How much magic can Robert Saleh spin? That would be the big question to me. So Brock reacts, Warner close. That's the deal as far as the 49ers are concerned. I'm sorry about this. I do know this about Mark, and I will find out what's going on. I don't block anybody. Like I said, I don't block anybody, but our good friend Mark hit me up over the weekend. I haven't had an opportunity to check into it, but I will check into it right after the show today because I don't know what's going on as far as that goes. I don't block anybody. I know we had a problem with Rockin' one time where all of a sudden, like I went to this certain area, and it was like there was a block for a couple of people, and I never blocked them. I never block anybody. I never block anybody. I don't care. If somebody's going to be that way, they're going to get, you know, what's going to happen is that people are going to weed them out. We have such a great community here that people are going to weed them out and they'll just go away. Plus I just won't acknowledge them. So that's just kind of how it goes. But yeah, I'll make sure that gets fixed. I don't know what happened. I have no idea what happened. Cause like I said, I don't block anybody. And I definitely didn't block him cause he's great. So yeah, Jennifer Lee Chan said it was close. I want to make sure that I give her credit 100%. Because she says they're dotting I's, crossing T's. I have not heard anything on that. So I'll make sure that I follow up on that. I will I'll do some work after the show today, and I will let you know. Fuji says, bottom of the pint drink coasters. Yeah, that would be cool. So would you want a coaster or a koozie? Because those are cool. And like I said, the logo that Dom put together is fire, man. So we got to do that. I'll make sure that we do that. Plus, well, we got, you know what we have to get is we have to get pint glasses. because Krug and I are always, you know, pouring beers into the pints. You know what's funny is every Saturday morning, and I only probably had on Friday night during Pot on the Pint, I probably only had, I don't know, 4 or 5 beers or whatever over the time of the game. And so I walk in, you know, I gather my stuff up here in the studio. I leave the windows open and stuff. Every Saturday morning I walk in here without question to do the show, and it always smells like beers in here. Like always. I don't know what's going on. But I had the pretzels. I had everything going on. There's those Dot pretzels, by the way, keep those away from me. Because I told you about the cinnamon and sugar ones are like crack. And there's a couple other flavors that they have, but just the original, I had never gotten them. And my son grabbed them. So I just grabbed like a, you know, bagful or whatever, handful. And I was eating those. Oh my God. You can drink like 9,000 beers with those things. They're so good. You know what I'm talking about? Those Dot pretzels. Excuse me. My goodness. Yeah, they're the worst. I mean, you're just like, get them away from me. I don't even buy the cinnamon and sugar ones. That's like the purple. That's got the purple on the bag. And the reason I got turned on to those, if you remember, Justin Jefferson, who's got the biggest sweet tooth ever, the Vikings wide receiver, and they did the receiver show last year before the season started, and they open up a cabinet in his house, and all it is junk food. Like, dude's an NFL wide receiver, maybe the best NFL wide receiver right now going, and you open up a thing in his house, a snack, whatever, it was a door, and he had so much junk food in there. And they go, well, what's your favorite? And he grabs those Dot pretzels and it has like the purple on the bag. And they're a cinnamon and sugar pretzel. If you eat one, you'll eat 100. I mean, it's just, they're so, and I saw them. I went, oh, I'm going to try those. I threw them away. I'm not even kidding you. The cardinal sin is anytime you snack, you should just put it in a bowl. And then it makes you go up and get more. And a lot of times you're lazy and you won't. But I made the mistake of bringing the bag over to the couch. So I'm watching some random game. I don't remember what it was. And I open up the bag of those things. And I'm not even kidding you. I didn't even realize I was doing it. It was like, I'm shoveling those damn things in. And it I don't know, it had to be 30 minutes. And I'm like 3/4 of the way down the bag. I'm like, what in the hell just happened? I literally walked over to the garbage and threw them away. There's like 1/4 of a bag left. I'm like, I can't have those. Unbelievable. Those are really good. Yeah, cannot do that. Cannot. Yeah, I'll make sure that I will make sure that I get Mark fixed up. I apologize for that because I did not. I don't know what happened there, and this happened once before, so I'll make sure. I have no idea, but I'll make sure that I fix that up. So I will make sure to do that. Yeah, bottom of the Dots. I mean, seriously, it was ridiculous. Where was that? Yeah, bottom of the Dots. Ugh. Yeah, I can't have those. He did buy the mini bags though, so it was like, you know, even if I did and I was in here and I was talking, so it was like I was gonna jump out of the off the show, but it was like cannot deal with those anymore. I'm just like, no, can't do it. Those are really good. I don't know if they're more addictive, you know, everybody's got kind of their addictive thing, but for me, those are bad. All right, as far as the Warriors go, let me give you a couple of quick things before we get out of here today. As far as the Warriors, I played this on Saturday. Love to get your thoughts on it. One more quick thing. And by the way, Final Four. Let me go Final Four, then I'll go Dunleavy on JK. I don't know how excited you are. Obviously, you're a Warriors fan, and you would hope that they would be there. But Oklahoma City and Minnesota, I'll watch. I'm intrigued because you're talking about neither of those teams have ever been to the finals. Now, if you want to be technical, the Sonics have been. But Oklahoma City's not the Sonics. I was talking to a friend of mine over the weekend who lives in Seattle, and they were – riding pieces in Oklahoma. Well, you know, it's like, you're not the Sonics, right? You're not the Sonics. So Oklahoma City has never been to the NBA finals. The Minnesota Timberwolves, obviously. So to me, that's going to be Oklahoma City's been there. What am I talking about with Durant and those guys? But, you know, this group and then Minnesota. So you got a couple of young teams there that are going. And then you look over to the East and maybe I'm wrong here, but the Knicks look really, really good. And I don't hate the Knicks. Like most New York things, like, I don't want New York to win. I don't want the Yankees to win. I don't want the Mets to win. I don't want the Giants to win. I don't want the Jets to win. But, you know, the Knicks are kind of an interesting story. It's hard to root against Jalen Brunson. I think it'd be interesting. I think you go back to, 94, the OJ Chase in Houston and all that kind of stuff. So it's been a while for New York. I'm not saying I'm rooting for New York, but certainly amongst the teams, and they haven't been there for a while. So that's kind of how you get it in your head, no matter if it's a small market, big market, New York. Maybe you just flat out don't like New York across the board. But I think that would be interesting if you had like New York versus a, Minnesota type. And if you're a conspiracy theorist, by the way, and I am, do you think that the NBA would allow an Indiana, Minnesota, an Indiana, Oklahoma City? I don't. I'll be completely honest with you. I don't, there might be some weird calls in the Indiana, New York series, because I just don't think the NBA is going to even chance an Indiana, Oklahoma City or an Indiana, Minnesota. I don't see it. I do not see it. I'm a conspiracy theorist. New York's going to the NBA finals. Because if you're going to get a small market like Minnesota or, heaven forbid, Oklahoma City, they need New York to offset it. Indiana, Oklahoma City, that would have the worst ratings of all time. I'm not watching Indiana, Oklahoma City. Don't care who wins it. Do not. Not going to happen. So, Knicks are going to the finals now that I think about it. All right, here's if on Saturday you missed the show, and that's okay, I understand. If you missed the show on Saturday, we're Monday through Friday here on John Lund Unleashed on YouTube, Monday through Friday, 8 a.m., and then on Saturdays, we do a 10 a.m. show. We played this for you. So they, press conference, end of the year kind of stuff. Here's Mike Dunleavy. And this, I believe, is Anthony Slater asking the questions here. Does a great job covering the Warriors for The Athletic. Talking to Mike Dunleavy about the future of one JK.
Like, there's no new contracts, right? So we've got to figure something out. And that's what it's going to be. We value JK. I think he had a resilient season, is probably the way I'd classify it. You know, he had some ups and downs playing. Most importantly, he had this injury where he missed 31 games. He came back. It was a new team. There were some adjustments. But overall, commend him for his professionalism. I thought he was resilient. And as far as, you know, bringing him back next season, I think it's something that we're very interested in doing, because when I look at the things JK does well in terms of getting to the rim, finishing, getting fouled, these are things we greatly need. And we know he can bring those to the table. It's not hypothetical. It's not a guy in the draft that we think can do it. He's shown for 4 years he can do that. So for that reason, you know, we'll try to bring him back, but we've got to have those conversations. You got to figure it out. It's a two-way street in terms of, you know, creating, you know, a new contract and all that. So we'll see where it goes.
He's asked more about this, but I want to pop in at that point. He's asked, you know, would you do sign and trades? Would you do this and that? And look, this is not against Mike Dunleavy. It's lying season 24/7, 365. I tell you that all the time. They've got to maintain leverage on Jonathan Kuminga. So people are going to report, and that's what they do. This is what Mike Dunleavy said. I get it. But what Mike Dunleavy didn't say there was he's 100% returning. We, you know, this, that, and the other. He wasn't in the rotation. You don't need me to tell you all that stuff all over again. They're trading him. They're going to sign and trade him. And the one part that he did say that was completely truthful there is it's a two-way street. I tell you this all the time. NBA basketball players and players in general in sports, but especially in the NBA, they have more power than they've ever had. So while I logically think that Giannis' best fit, for example, would be the Spurs, and that Milwaukee could get the best return from the Spurs because they have the second overall pick, a bunch of young players, they have the 14th pick as well, logic would tell you Giannis would want to go to San Antonio. If Giannis said, look, I want to go to the Warriors. I've always wanted to play with Steph Curry. Get me to the Warriors. Milwaukee really would have no other choice but to say, okay, what do you got? You got Kuminga. You got, you know, we got to make the salaries match. You got to, you know, all these different things would happen, and Giannis would be a Warrior because players have that much power. In the past, it's like, well, he's not coming to the Warriors. They couldn't offer him the best deal. That really isn't relevant anymore. It's where that player wants to go. I'm done playing with the Bucks. You're rebuilding. So, yeah, I mean, he could come here, but Kuminga's going somewhere. And the point of him at the end there where he said, well, it's a two-way street. Kuminga doesn't want to come back to the Warriors. Why would you? Hey, we're going to give you a contract, but you weren't in the rotation last year. Jonathan Kuminga's looking around, and I said this about Wiseman. He's looking at Anthony Edwards thriving. He's looking at LaMelo Ball thriving, and he's in the middle, and he can't get any play time and not do anything about it. I'm not saying that Wiseman would have been a great player in this league. I am saying that he lost his confidence, got injuries, and things just went down a rabbit hole for him. And Kuminga could see the same thing. Kuminga's looking there going, what am I going to do, sign up for 4 more years of this? Hell no. He wants to know whether he can play or not. I mentioned Jalen Green's name. Jalen Green was in the first draft, was in the same draft, taken second overall. He's just, hey, you know what, Jalen Green, we're Houston. We suck. Not now, but then. You're playing. We have no choice but to play you. And it's the same thing. Kuminga would have been much further along in his development had he been able to play. We've talked about it. Draymond's screaming at him, you can't play the right way. Steve's jerking him around. He's in the lineup, out of the lineup, misses a defense rotation. Steve's screaming at him, takes him out of the game. You lose confidence that way. You know, it's like a dog or something. Am I going to get hit? You know, they get defensive if they've been in a you know, situation like that, then you get that dog and you're like, oh, what's wrong with that dog? And it's like, well, he's been in a situation that wasn't so great. And Kuminga's the same thing. Every time he makes a mistake, he's looking over at the bench like, I'm getting yanked. And he's going to go to an organization that's probably not very good. Like, let's just say for the sake of conversation that Giannis says he's hell-bent on coming and playing with Steph. And they've got a two-year window here, and Giannis says, I am hell-bent. I want to play with Steph. All right, well, Kuminga clearly is going to Milwaukee and a bunch of other guys, and Kuminga's cool with that because he's like, who's on this team? Nobody. I'm going to take every shot I want. I'm going to score 25, 28. I might score 30 a game. You know, it's the same situation as Jordan Poole with Washington, right? There's not a lot of talent around him. Go crazy. Now, Jordan Poole would probably tell you, God, it was a lot more fun winning and maybe playing a little bit less, but I don't know. Maybe Jordan Poole likes what he's doing. But that's what's going to happen with Kuminga. He's going to go on a bad team. He's going to be able to score as much as he wants. He might make an all-star team, but can Jonathan Kuminga, and I say this all the time, can Jonathan Kuminga work within a winning team? Maybe. I mean, he showed it at certain times. Maybe he can. Maybe he can't. But we'll find out next year because he's going to go to a team and the coach is going to be able to say, look, you're not getting yanked. You know, you might make a boneheaded play. You might miss a rotation. You might, you know, not block a guy out. You might take a bad shot. You might not, you know, move the ball one last time that would have got us an open corner three, whatever. You're going to play. And that's what's going to happen in the offseason. So Warriors are going to be an interesting offseason here, but it basically comes down to this. There's a two-year window. There's a two-year window for all these guys. That's the contracts that they have left, and that's what the deal is going to be as far as they go. One last thing on last season, and then we're going to be done with the Warriors, and everything's going to be moving on. I saw this quote. Steve Kerr believes the Warriors still accomplish a lot this season, even though their playoff run was cut short. Quote, it's important to celebrate that, unquote. I'm sorry, Steve, and I'm speaking for fans, but the only success for a Warriors fan, as long as you're around, Steph's around, now Jimmy and Draymond, is a championship. That's it. I mean, I'm not saying it was a failure because that's too strong of a word, but that's what, you know, on the talking head shows, it's either a failure or a championship. It's a failed season. It's not a failed season. But until this thing gets flushed down the toilet and there's no more Steph and there's no more Kerr and there's no more Draymond, and then everything can reset. And as a fandom, and this is just how it works, as a fandom, you have these high expectations. And then when those players leave, then they reset and you can build them back up again. Like the Giants right now, you know, Posey leaves, Belt leaves, Crawford leaves, Timmy leaves, Kane leaves, Bum leaves. Okay, Bochy leaves. It's not okay. We understand it's not the same. But as long as Kerr, Curry, and Draymond are around, if it's not a championship, then the fan base isn't happy about it. I mean, it's just how it is. It's unfortunate. But like second round of the playoffs, we're rebuilding this thing up. No, you're not. You got 2 more years. Everybody's got 2 years left on their contract. And the only thing that matters, because the players say it themselves, is a championship. Steph talks about it all the time. Draymond talks about it all the time. Anything short of that, because this team has been built up to that point. Like we've seen it with these guys. So you can't go back to, got to be cool to make the playoffs. Gosh, it's nice to make the second round. Geez, we made it to the conference finals. Yeah, we made it to the NBA finals. Like it's either you win the thing or you don't. And the game will be reset like a video game. Like we'll reset everything. But when Curry leaves, when Draymond leaves, when you leave, Steve, and then that new regime comes in, and then it's like, yeah, if we win – If oh my gosh, you know what? This young team made the playoffs. Then, you know, everybody will be happy and we'll go back to the we believe and everybody will be all jacked up. Oh, we made the playoffs. But as long as 30 especially is out there, there's a certain expectation and it's not a failure. I'm not saying that. A failure would have been what they did last year, which was you get into the play-in, you lose, right? Just like they did that for a couple years in a row. Play-in, lose. Like that's a failure for this team. To get to the second round, pretty cool. If Curry doesn't get hurt, do they move on? I personally don't think so. You know, they get to the conference finals, hypothetically speaking, they play Oklahoma City, everyone's excited, but even if they lose in that round, it's like, eh, we've seen them hoist the trophy. We've seen them drink the champagne. We've seen the parades, you know, we've seen it. So unless they do that, you don't call it a failure, but you certainly don't call it a success. So whatever term you want to use, and I get what Steve is doing. It can't be all or nothing. It can't, you know, it's got to be something about it. There's not with this team. There's no middle ground. Like, oh, man, they made it to the second round. Cool. Fans are spoiled. So there you go. All right, that is episode 143. The Giants sweep Wilmer, Ramos. Birdsong is in. Hicks is out. Verlander, mystery injury. Let's keep an eye on that. But it wouldn't be a bad time for him to maybe take a bit of a break.
Brock's reaction. We'll get more of that. I'll get a little bit more of that. I didn't get a ton of it this morning, but I don't know how anybody can complain. Jennifer Lee Chan says Fred Warner is close if they get that done in the offseason. I don't know. Would I call it a successful offseason? I don't know that I would go that far, but certainly successful in terms of getting Brock done early, getting Kittle done early, getting Warner's deal redone, all that kind of stuff. Success is not the right word. I'm going to have to think on that. Dunleavy on JK, the Warriors, the NBA Final Four, and random stuff like those dot pretzels. Man, I am. I'm 100% addicted to those things. Just crazy. Anything else before we jump out? Yeah, just hit me up, man. Hit me up. I'm willing to do anything. You know me. I will make sure that we get Mark's situation figured out. I'm sorry, Mark. I love seeing you in here every day, so it's weird that, but we'll get that. We'll get that. Hi, Sherman Boy. Good to see you. Yep. One game. I mean, like I said, I'm a little late on the quarter poll for the Giants, quarter point of the season, but everything's an A. Not everybody across the board is an A, but an A. Yeah, that's a good call by you, Skills. A 17, 36, 49, or 52-year NBA championship drought will end next month. And you're obviously going over the Sonics won it in 79, right? Sonics in 79. I don't count Oklahoma City as the Sonics because everybody I know there in Seattle is like, F that. They are not. Let's see, your wife need. Oh, are you talking about those pretzels? No, she doesn't. Stay away. Stay away. Like Joy says, man, those things are crazy addictive. Crazy addictive. Anyway. There you go. That is, I'm not saying don't get them because then, you know, maybe they could become a sponsor of the show. I'm just simply saying that, man, that stuff is crazy. That stuff is crazy. Want to tell you one more time about my good friends. Of course, Dr. Riopel. Where's the right one there? I missed it. There it is. Dr. Riopel and Riopel Sports Medicine. If you hit that up, my wife said this again to me yesterday. We were walking all over Santa Cruz. We're walking downtown. We're walking into all these different shops. And she's like, man, this is awesome. No problems with the foot. She never even brings these contraptions out of the freezer anymore for the shoulder or for the elbow. Tell Dr. Riopel that I sent you over. This stuff with the stem cell treatment is awesome. Stem cell treatment with Dr. Riopel, one of the first in California to do it. Wherever that pain is, ankle, foot, elbow, shoulder. My wife has all these pains. Her back is an issue for her. I'm telling you, stem cell is the answer. You're seeing to yourself, wait a minute, man. I'm telling you, he's been doing it for a long time, one of the first in California to do it. All you got to do is click on that QR code right there for Dr. Riopel. Tell him I sent you over. Hey, Lund told me to call. What can you do for me? She's talking about how much better his wife feels with all this stuff that she had going on. What can you do for me? He's over in San Ramon. I'm telling you, if you're in the East Bay, no brainer. If you're thinking to yourself, man, that's too far to go, I'm telling you, to feel better, it's not at all. And he is the best. Dr. Riopel, my wife can swear by it. I can swear by it because I would look over on the couch. We'd be watching a show or something. And she'd look like, you know, she just played in the seventh game of the NBA Finals or in the Super Bowl or something. She's got all these contraptions and ice bags and stuff all over it. None of that. None of that anymore. Thanks to Dr. Riopel and the stem cell treatment from Dr. Riopel. So make sure you click on that QR code right there and tell him that I sent you over and he will take extra special care of you. And then, of course, I told you this about, it's been about 2 weeks now that I've done the testosterone. I had low T, and I've been working on and worked with other doctors and other companies with the low T, and a lot of them do the same thing. You know, you take a quick blood test, but the difference was, here's how much you need. But I was having to go in to get weekly shots and was like, what a pain in the ass. And so with Dr. Riopel, there's none of that. It's every about 4 months you do it, take a quick blood test. Okay, this is where you are. We're going to bump you up to here. Real simple. You feel better. Your metabolism's faster. You're not cranky. You're not tired. You just feel like yourself again. You know, it's not like Barry Bonds. It's not Balco. It's none of that kind of stuff. It's real simple, all legal stuff. And you want to feel better. And that's what I wanted. So low T, I've dealt with it for a number of years, but this is the best I've ever felt. Perfect doses, easiest, lasts the longest. Dr. Riopel can get it done for you. So again, Riopel Sports Medicine. If you click on it right there, there's the other one. Well, you can click on either one. Either one will get you to Dr. Riopel. And if you can't remember Dr. Jeffrey Riopel right there, R-I-O-P-E-L-L-E. If you cannot remember, all you have to do, that's the logo right there, Riopel Sports Medicine. Click on one of those and you can get those appointments. Tell Dr. Riopel I sent you over and he will take extra special care of you. And if you are going, hey, wait a minute, what's going on? I can't remember. Just Google it. Dr. Jeffrey Riopel in San Ramon, Riopel Sports Medicine, Dr. Jeffrey Riopel. Plus, not only do they do the procedures I'm telling you about, these aren't the only two. They do all sorts of great procedures for you, your significant other, your wife, your girlfriend, whatever. You will feel great. She will feel great. You will feel great. You will feel great together. And it's all because of our good friends, Dr. Jeffrey Riopel. So make sure that you check him out, Google him, or click on those QR codes I gave you, and you will be golden. All right. Anything else we missed today? We did a great job on episode 43, getting you caught up on anything. Remember, if anything happens during the day, I always jump on here. So keep those alerts on. Please, before you leave today, give me a thumbs up, click. So if you're over on, maybe you're watching on Instagram, maybe you're watching on X at John Lund Radio, come over here and to the John Lund Unleashed page. Give us a like, give us a follow, and please keep those alerts on, and you will know when things are happening. Why do you want ribs, Skills? I really would like some ribs now, though, right now, now that you're saying that. Let's see. I do remember that Bucko Sports. You did call out Wilmer since day one, because I was like, why is this guy up at bat? By the way, I have acknowledged the fact that Lamont Wade Jr. hit a triple yesterday. What else do you want me to do? A bunch of people hit me up going, Lamont Wade Jr. hit a pinch hit triple. Way to go. What's he hitting, a .156 or something? So anyway. All right, everybody, I'm not ending the show negative. Everybody, thanks for hanging out today. Really appreciate it. Thanks for the supers today. Thank you, Fuji. You're the best, man. I appreciate you. Thanks for the supers on the show today. Everybody have a wonderful Monday. And do remember, please, subscribe to John Lund Unleashed. Subscribe to the Bay Area Sports Collective. Make sure that you have those alerts on for both. And if you'd give us a like before you get out of here at John Lund Unleashed, that would be amazing. Everybody have a wonderful Monday. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 8 a.m. Keep those alerts on, because we got other stuff that we're going to be sending out through the day. Hit me up in that comment section. Make sure that you give us a like, and have a wonderful Monday.
Thanks for hanging out with John Lund Unleashed. We'll try to be better next time, though I wouldn't hold my breath. Please like and subscribe on the John Lund Unleashed Pod YouTube channel. Watch live shows weekdays at 8 a.m. on YouTube, Instagram, and X. And make sure to have your alerts on for shows throughout the day or night. All things Lund can be found at johnlundunleashed.com. johnlundunleashed.com.
Goodbye!